Today, on The Exam Room.
Dieting really can slow your metabolism, and that is not a myth. When people really go on the diet that focuses on calorie counting, your body is almost thrown into sort of a hibernation where your metabolism goes down to preserve calories. And you're saying to your body, wait, stop. I'm trying to burn calories. Don't try to save body fat. But your body is not listening because your body was programmed, if I can put it that way, a long time ago when there was such a thing as a famine. And the people who survived and passed their genes along were people who could reduce their metabolism to survive the famine. If you couldn't, if just reducing your food intake meant that you were just going to continue to burn calories, you wouldn't have survived. So it's unfortunately, it's your body's system, and it really does fight the weight control efforts.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Want to say hi to the Exam Roomies listening in College Station, Texas, Port St. Lucie, Florida, and Antananarivo, Madagascar. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 29 of season 7, number 528 overall. If you're struggling with your weight, you may be wondering whether your metabolism is to blame. You know, a sluggish metabolism can set you back on the scale and take a toll on your health, and you may be thinking to yourself, have all of these years of unhealthy eating permanently ruined my metabolism? Well, today we hope to put that fear to bed because we are doing a deep dive into metabolism and how you can take back control, how to speed it up, why it slows down, when it slows down, hello age talking to you, and what to eat to pump it right back up. And the man with the metabolism plan is a leading voice in nutrition, a multiple-time best-selling author, and a dear friend of the show, Dr. Neil Barnard. His latest book, The Power Foods Diet, all about trapping, taming, and burning calories for easy and permanent weight loss, is already the number one selling weight loss diet book on Amazon. And you know, when it comes to weight loss, metabolism is a big part of it. So on tap on the show today from the Exam Room Live, all about metabolism, a ton of questions from the doctor's mailbag sent in by you roomies. Does eating frequent small meals really work? And what herbs and spices does your metabolism respond to? Plus, why muscles are important, but you don't need to look like Arnold to get the benefits. Plus, healthy fats, antioxidants, amino acids, fruit juice, B12, omega-3s, how all of those and more fit into your metabolism equation. So let's talk all about it right now and answer the question. Will your metabolism be slow forever? Probably not. Let's find out why with Dr. Neil Barnard on the Exam Room Live. Great to see you, sir.
Well, hi, Chuck. Great to be with you today.
It's great to have you here. Metabolism, a hot topic always when it comes to weight loss. I remember Dr. Barnard being overweight and thinking that, yeah, despite the fact that I was eating all of this unhealthy food, I really did have a slow metabolism, and that was why I was so heavy. How much credence is there to that line of thought?
Well, metabolism is an important part of weight control. In fact, your body is burning calories all the time. It's burning calories when you sleep. It's burning even more calories when you wake up, even more calories when you're exercising and doing things. And what's happening within your body, your muscle cells are big calorie burners. They are burning calories, first of all, just to maintain your body temperature. Even when you're not moving, walking, lifting something, your muscles are burning calories to maintain that 98.6, which is what makes humans different from crocodiles, because crocodiles don't do that at all. They've got to lie in the sun to get warm, but human beings maintain body temperature, and that requires calorie burning. But your metabolism can change. You're not wrong. And a slow metabolism can lead to weight problems.
All right, let's dive right into it. We have a lot of questions about metabolism from the exam room. There's a lot of whom sent them in ahead of time. Let's start with Rick and the big one that I'm sure many of our exam roomies tuning in right now are wondering. And Rick's getting up there. Didn't give us a number, but he's getting up there clearly. Says, Dr. Barnard, how does age affect metabolism and what can be done to mitigate the nasty effects of age in the slowing metabolism?
Yeah, don't age. No, okay. There actually is a big drop off in metabolism. And you know when it occurs? It's not at 39, 49, 59. It's at between about 4, 6, 8 months of age. That's right. Little babies have the highest metabolism they are ever going to have in their whole lives because they are very rapidly growing. Their body is constructing new body tissues, and their metabolism is higher than it's going to be. It comes down a little bit, but then actually, this is going to surprise you, Rick, that your metabolism stays really pretty constant through the early 20s, 30s, 40s, yes, 50s. And after about 60, you do see for most people a drop-off. That's not because of the calendar pages turning. It's typically because we are more inactive. We've lost muscle mass. And if you don't have muscles, you don't have your calorie burners. That's probably the big thing.
All right. Well, let's talk about it because it seems to me that the drop-off there is much later than a lot of us thought. And I think that some of us feel like we were just born with slow metabolism. Like it's just in our DNA. Matter of fact, Kimmy wondering about that. What role do genetics play in determining a person's metabolism?
Genetics do play a big role. There are some people, and by the way, I should say genetics play a role in many aspects of weight control. Your appetite set point can be in part genetically determined, but so can your metabolism to a degree. But Chuck, maybe this is what the callers are thinking about too, is that sometimes our metabolism is slowing down and it has nothing to do with the biological clock. It has nothing to do with age. What it has to do with is as the years go by, fatty foods that we have been gradually eating day by day contribute fats into the muscle cells and they interfere with the muscle's ability to burn calories. Specifically, what they do is as that, we call it intramyocellular lipid, builds up in the cell, that's fat inside a muscle cell. As it builds up, glucose, which is the fuel the muscle cells want to burn, it can't get in anymore because the cell is now filled with fat. So that can happen over time, but that's not the calendar page it's turning. And you will see that. You could see that before kids get their high school diploma.
So let me ask you this. We know that intramyocellular lipid is a big contributor to diabetes. Are people who are living with diabetes then more prone to having a slower metabolism?
Yeah, yes. And sort of the reverse is also true, that the same weight or the same issues where the fat is getting into the muscle cells, that means that the sugar can't get in, so their diabetes tends to eventually become diagnosed. But by the same token, if the sugar isn't getting in, it's staying in the blood. In the blood, it cannot be burned. It can't contribute to your metabolism. To be able to burn it, what we do is we get the fat out of the diet. As we do, the fat that's been building up in the muscle cells for years starts to dissipate. The sugar, the glucose that's in your blood will now suddenly get into your muscle cells and your muscles can burn it. So the diabetes gets better. Yes, your blood sugar comes down, but your metabolism is recovering. By the way, it's not just in the muscles. The liver does the same thing.
Interesting. So as that fat's exiting, as a person's losing weight, they're exercising, likely eating healthier, the metabolism then naturally is being sped up, right?
Yeah, your metabolism will speed up. The other piece of this that you'll see is there's more than one type of metabolism. The type that I was describing earlier, when you're asleep, that's your resting metabolism. And that can easily be measured. We call it your resting metabolic rate. That varies depending on the time of day, and it varies from person to person. But there's another chunk of metabolism that you can change really rapidly, and it's your after-meal metabolism, sometimes called postprandial, which is just a fancy word for after-meal, postprandial metabolism, or called the thermic effect of food. The reason it's called the thermic effect of food is you eat a meal, The nutrients from that meal are going in. They are starting to go into your muscle cells and going into other cells of your body. Your cells are doing work absorbing them. They are getting in there. They're getting burned. And your metabolism ramps right up. And you can measure it for 3, 4, 5 hours after the meal, a much more rapid metabolism. And the degree to which your metabolism rises depends on what you ate at that meal.
Angela is wondering if we could do a little bit deeper dive into, you were talking about muscles being really key here. And so she's kind of wondering, well, if I go to the gym and I'm on the treadmill and I see like this really big muscle-bound person pumping iron, is their metabolism going to be higher than mine because they have bigger muscle mass?
Yes, it will. And let's say you're 85 years old, you're in the nursing home, and you're thinking, what am I going to do? Because I'd like to ramp up my metabolism. Even then, if you give your muscles work to do, they gradually increase in size, and your metabolism is proportional to that.
Very interesting. I think a lot of people put like the onus completely on food here, which obviously plays a big part, but the muscle thing, and that brings exercise into the equation. So that seems to be really kind of key here.
Chuck, I mean, I'm so glad you're raising this, though. Forgive me for interrupting. Both really do matter. So let's say you're exercising, but the kind of exercise you're doing is aerobic exercise. You're brisk walking, you're running, you're playing tennis. That will burn calories acutely and your metabolism will rise because of the physical activity. However, you notice most runners don't have massive musculature. They tend to be pretty slim because that's not a muscle building exercise. If a person does do weight bearing exercise, you do it with your lower limbs, you can do it with your trunk, you can do it with your upper limbs too, do it with your arms. That is what actually builds the size of the muscles, and that then causes a more calorie burn.
Interesting. So I feel like we just knocked out one misconception there. Emily is wondering about what some other common misconceptions are about metabolism that you may have heard of through the years and what the truth actually is about them.
Well, I have to say, sometimes people think, well, dieting is really going to help. Dieting really can slow your metabolism, and that is not a myth. When people really go on the diet that focuses on calorie counting, your body is almost thrown into sort of a hibernation where your metabolism goes down to preserve calories. And you're saying to your body, wait, stop. I'm trying to burn calories. Don't try to save body fat. But your body is not listening because your body was programmed, if I can put it that way, a long time ago when there was such a thing as a famine. And the people who survived famine and passed their genes along were people who could reduce their metabolism to survive the famine. If you couldn't, if just reducing your food intake meant that you were just going to continue to burn calories, you wouldn't have survived. So unfortunately, it's your body's system, and it really does fight the weight control efforts. There's another chunk of this is endocrine conditions can sometimes weigh in here. Most of them don't, but there's one that needs to be mentioned, and that's your thyroid. Your thyroid gland right here at the base of your neck. Nobody even knows it's there. It's kind of this Clark Kent of the endocrine world, but it is in fact a Superman because it causes your body to ramp up its calorie burning speed. So how does it work? Your thyroid gland takes iodine from iodized salt, iodine from seaweed. It converts it into thyroid hormone. The thyroid hormone goes into your bloodstream. It tells your muscles, hey, let's start burning calories faster. And if you decided, well, I'm not going to eat any iodized salt, and I'm not going to have any source of iodine in my diet for whatever reason, you become hypothyroid, and you don't have the energy that you need. Now, iodine is a little bit of a double-edged sword. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to underdo it. But I recommend that people have seaweed in their diet every day. Nori, wakame, the kind of stuff that they wrap around a sushi roll. Don't have the fish sushi, but the nori and the other seaweeds are a huge, really healthy source of iodine. Iodized salt is good. Don't overdo it with salt. But when you choose salt, choose an iodized brand that will give your thyroid the help it needs. If you wish to, you could take an iodine supplement, usually marketed as kelp.
All right. Let's take an interesting question from Lisa. It goes back to what it was you were talking about earlier in the show, how your metabolism basically begins to slow shortly after you're born. Lisa, though, is looking at different stages of life and what are the effects that they have on metabolism. Specifically, she's wondering about puberty, pregnancy, and menopause, the different stages of life there.
Yeah, terrific. Terrific point. Puberty is a time where our metabolism is reasonably high, but it doesn't actually slow a lot when you pass from puberty into your 20s and 30s. It does continue to stay pretty stable. Menopause is a time when many women will say, I am not making this up. I just look at food nowadays and I gain weight. And that may be partly because of menopausal shifts. Estrogen is a really tricky hormone. It's the main female sex hormone, estradiol, estrone, estriol, these are all estrogens. And at menopause, the amount of estradiol in your body goes down really quickly. And so people have thought, well, maybe that's the reason I'm gaining weight. Maybe. But what also happens at menopause is we just are experiencing also the accumulated effects of tiny fat particles that have gotten into our muscles as the years have gone by. So menopause itself may not really be to blame. And also I hasten to add that I don't think that taking hormone replacement is the answer. Keep in mind on farms to fatten up cows, estrogens are really commonly given. And it's very, very, very much a double-edged sword. Also, when people have high levels of estrogen, their cancer risk rises. So the accumulated fat inside our muscle and liver cells is the big issue. Also, at menopause, you do see some people being hypothyroid. That's really an issue of partly the iodine that I mentioned. Partly, it can also relate to the accumulated effects of foods that we have consumed. In fact, if you don't mind, Chuck, let me just give you a little bit of more information on this, because here in the U.S., most people are getting enough iodine, so their thyroid has that. But their iodine, their thyroid gland is getting attacked by antibodies. What's happening is you consume dairy, milk, cheese, yogurt. The proteins in the dairy are perceived by the body to be a foreign invader, like a virus. Your body recognizes them as that. It's a foreign protein, but it's not a virus, but your immune system attacks it. Antibodies form to attack it, and those same antibodies attack your thyroid gland. That's called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and that actually is the most common form of hypothyroidism here in the United States. So that's a big reason, and we often see that in midlife.
Let me go back and ask you about the pregnancy part of Lisa's question. I know, and I am certainly not the right person to be asking this question. Never been pregnant, never will be pregnant, don't even have a child. Nonetheless, there is this idea out there that when a woman is pregnant, she's eating for two, she can eat whatever she wants. If there is that philosophy that is applied, how detrimental could that be to her metabolism? Or do we even know what happens to a woman's metabolism during pregnancy? Has that been studied?
Well, she is eating for two. The thing to remember is one of you is extremely small. So it's not as if you're not eating for a Mack truck, okay? That baby is really small. And so the weight gain in pregnancy should be moderate. It shouldn't be excessive. But the funny thing is that our tastes during pregnancy do get a little crazy sometimes, and appetite can get tricky. And so people may tend to overdo it a little bit with certain foods, and the weight that's gained during pregnancy is sometimes really hard to lose. Pro tip, breastfeed your baby. It's good for the baby. I consider it really, really important. There are some cases where it's not possible, but if at all possible, do it. Go to La Leche League or talk with an older sister or a cousin or your mother, because the awkwardness or discomfort that is often kind of at the beginning of breastfeeding, it'll typically melt away and you will be really happy you did it. Why am I talking about that in a metabolism program? Because when women breastfeed, they lose their excess weight more readily. It's good in many ways, and it's the best darn thing you can do for your baby. Your baby also is more likely to be healthy when the baby is breastfed.
And let's grab a question from Manny, wondering what are the long-term effects? What are the long-term effects of having slow metabolism if somebody doesn't address the issue?
Well, if you have a slowed metabolism that just continues, you are going to see continued weight gain that tends not to get reversed. It tends to continue. And also you'll feel it. I mean, other people feel fine. You feel cold. You may notice also that your hair and skin don't seem very healthy. So a slowed metabolism is not really healthy to maintain.
All right, and boosting it back up, Brian is wondering, this is something that I've heard virtually my entire life, that eating small, frequent meals is critical for keeping metabolism up. Is there truth to that notion?
Well, you would think so, because after a meal, your body is absorbing the nutrients, and that does ramp up the metabolism. I was describing this earlier as the thermic effect of food. So every meal you have, every snack you have, does have a metabolic effect. Here's the problem with that reasoning, is you're also taking in calories to make it happen. So frequent small meals sounded like a great idea, but when they've been put to the test, they don't really lead to healthy weight loss. And so now nowadays, there's been a switch toward fewer but bigger meals. So not that you're eating more overall, but you're confining it to shorter periods of time and then fasting in between. Now, when I say fast, I mean you're just not eating overnight. But instead of having 8 or 10 small little meals during the course of the day, this kind of grazing thing that was being researched a lot in the 80s and 90s. Now people are looking at more meal timing and having the meals earlier in the day and more calories packed in that time.
Well, let me ask you this. I remember being overweight at one point and thinking that eating more frequently was going to be my ticket to a healthier future. And I was working at a Mexican restaurant at the time, not Taco Bell. But every 2 hours, I thought that I had to eat. And so we had these little mini tortillas and I would roll the kid-sized burrito. And it was always like a pork burrito or a beef burrito or something like that with a little bit of rice and beans, guacamole, all the good stuff in there at the time, I thought. And so I thought that that was really going to help me out. Really did not lose a whole lot of weight doing that. If a person were to eat that kid-sized burrito, pork, beef, whatever the case may be, probably not doing themselves a lot of favors based off of what it was you just described.
And there, it's not necessarily just a timing issue, but it's also the type of food that a person is eating. If it's the pork, if it's the beef, you're getting that load of animal fat, 9 calories in every gram of fat going into your body. So it's very dense calories. And regrettably, the same is true with the guacamole, because the avocado is one of those very few fruits that's also quite high in fat. And if vegetable oils are added as well, what you're doing is you're just packing in a lot of calories. So let's say a person does want to eat more frequently. Best choices, get a banana, get an apple, get an orange, get some berries. The fruits tend to be good in the fact, great sources of complex carbohydrates and natural healthy sugars that will stimulate your metabolism. And they are not even remotely calorie dense. To kind of put a fine point on this, researchers did a study of apples and they asked people to eat 3 apples a day. Now, nobody does that in reality, but they said, no, this is research. We're going to test it. And what they showed is that by having 3 apples a day, people didn't gain an ounce. You would think adding all that food, you would gain weight, didn't gain weight at all. In fact, they lost weight. Why? It's got a lot of water. It's got a lot of fiber. The calories that it does have are in the form of natural sugars and complex carbohydrates. So best thing for your metabolism.
All right, let's stick with the Mexican fare. A lot of people have a burrito, they have a taco. What do they want with it? A nice cold cerveza. Steven is wondering whether alcohol consumption can impact a person's metabolism.
I'm going to break your heart here. Slows it down. Yeah. So yes, alcohol has a lot of issues and it can slow your metabolism in addition to the other negative effects that it has. So if you wanted to have something, yes, have that cocktail, have it be virgin, or just have a nice glass of water.
All right. Interesting question coming to us from Patrick. I've never even thought about this one. Maybe you have. How do environmental factors affect metabolism? Wondering specifically here about cold temperatures and high altitudes. So I'll just say hello, Denver, as we ask this.
Oh, my goodness. Well, cold temperatures, needless to say, what happens when you're cold? You feel it. You're shivering. Shivering is not something we do voluntarily. It's one of these kind of clumsy mechanisms that your body figured out to use your muscles to make your muscles burn calories faster. That's what shivering is. It's an involuntary muscular activity to just increase calorie burn. So yeah, your metabolism will ramp up with cold temperatures, with higher altitudes. I haven't seen evidence on that, but let me have a check on that. But with the cold temperatures, absolutely. And some people have tried to exploit this by using cold showers and cold baths and stuff like that to stimulate metabolism. Probably more trouble than it's worth, but you do see a little bit of a burn.
Not going to name any names, but I know somebody we work with who takes a cold shower every day. And I just cannot get on board with that plan. I was like, nah. Showers were not intended to be cold, if at all possible. All right, let's go back to the fatty food and the diet metabolism. So we were talking about the pork fat, the beef fat, the animal fat. Willie is wondering, though, about healthier fats, such as those found in avocados, nuts, and olive oil. What effect may they play in boosting a person's metabolism?
We have done studies where we bring in individuals and we'll measure their metabolism. And the way you do it is you put a person in a chair, comfortable chair, they're relaxing. They put on a mask. They're going to feel like a jet fighter pilot. The mask is actually measuring their carbon dioxide output, and you measure their oxygen input. And with some really simple arithmetic, I know your metabolic rate. And certain foods cause that metabolic rate to rise. However, the foods that you mentioned are not in that category. Fatty foods have been tested, and some reason, fat will just kind of slide into your body without really increasing your metabolism at all. The foods that tend to increase metabolism are not the fatty foods. They're the foods that tend to have complex carbohydrate in particular, or a mixture of carbohydrate and healthy protein. You can think of a bean, for example, or green vegetables. They've got a really nice balance of protein and complex carbohydrate. Those are the metabolism boosters. And when your foods have no fat in them, or virtually no fat in them, over time, as the fat comes out of your cells, that after-meal metabolism that you get goes up and up and up. And over the long run, it'll increase about 15% if you followed a low-fat plant-based diet.
All right, let's shift from fat to fatty acid. Take a question from Storm. How do omega-3 fatty acids affect metabolism?
Same story here. They sound good, and they have important effects. The omega-3s have many effects in the body. They deal with inflammation, are very helpful in many ways, but their effect on metabolism is really nil.
All right, what about folate? This is an interesting one, as long as we're just going down the nutrient list. Gina, how does folate impact metabolism, Dr. Barnard?
Oh, you know, the B vitamins, folate is a B vitamin. The B vitamins are interesting. Folate, I'm not so sure that the effect on metabolism is really particularly hot, but its cousin is vitamin B12, which we talk about all the time. It's something that vegans need frankly, everybody needs to take vitamin B12. B12 does seem to be a little bit of a metabolism booster. With folate, not so much.
How much of an impact? You say just a little. Are we talking like 1%, 2%? Is it really scant?
Of your metabolism increase?
Yeah, with the B12.
Yeah, I don't think it's really been studied enough for people to actually quantify it. But what we've seen is that there does seem to be somewhat of an effect on it, which has been a little bit surprising, because we really thought that the resting metabolism was not going to change much unless you had more muscle mass. The one that really is easy to change is the thermic effect of food after the meal, but the B12 may well affect resting metabolism. But my suspicion, Chuck, is that the change is rather modest. Oh, by the way, don't race out to the store and get an enormous amount of B12 to do this. The amount that your body needs is minuscule. The amount you need is 2.4 micrograms. That's the RDA for adults. You go to the store, you look at how much is in the foods, and you don't see any that say 2.4. They say 500, 1,000, 2,000, 10,000. Okay, that's a lot. Taking 100, 200, 500, fair enough. I would suggest not going beyond that unless you're taking it maybe every other day.
All right, let's shift over to amino acids. And can deficiencies in specific amino acids affect a person's metabolism? That comes to us from Patricia.
It's a great question. I don't really know the answer with this. What we do know is that amino acids in general are part of the metabolism boosting apparatus. Amino acids in general, Those are the building blocks of protein. And the foods that stimulate the after-meal calorie burn are foods that are mixtures of amino acids, ideally from plant sources, along with healthy complex carbohydrate. That's really the combination. And by the way, when you're looking for amino acids, let me suggest not getting them from animal products. That was the old thinking, but Harvard researchers put that to the test. They thought, if animal products seem to have such great protein, what's the health benefit? And by observing people over a long period of time, they discovered that people who would switch to plant proteins, plant sources of amino acids, they tended to have substantially less mortality. So, yes, get your amino acids, get them from plants.
Which seems to hint toward how you might answer this next question about dairy proteins, comes to us from Bell, and how dairy protein can, in fact, affect metabolism as well.
Well, protein is protein. In theory, dairy protein ought to be helpful. But as I mentioned earlier, when the Harvard researchers specifically tested dairy protein, and yes, it does have protein in it, but mortality was substantially reduced when people would switch from dairy to plant protein. So it is protein. It does have amino acids in it. But for some reason, mortality is higher. The other thing about dairy, though, that really ought to be said is that it's just asking for to harm your metabolism two ways. The number one nutrient in dairy is sugar, lactose sugar. The number two is fat. Those are not going to help your metabolism at all. And dairy products are one of the few sources of estrogens in the diet. Dairy comes from a cow. Cows make estrogens. The estrogens get into the milk, and the milk is turned into ice cream or cheese or whatever the estrogens are there. But what's really bad is that on every dairy in the world, the animals are artificially inseminated annually. They are milked well into the next pregnancy. They are making estradiol all the time. And the amount that gets into the milk goes up and up and up the longer they are milked into the pregnancy. So this is of concern to kids. You know, you're giving milk to your kid, your son, your daughter, is getting estradiol from a cow. It's not on the label. It's always there. But now you're 20 or you're 30 or you're 40 and you're consuming estradiol in dairy. And this has really become of great concern in recent years because of the new evidence showing links between dairy and breast cancer.
All right. Let's stick with a few more here. Sharon, how do foods that have a lot of iron in them, like spinach and red meat, influence metabolism? Would I be correct in assuming, not to scoop you here, but you're going to have kind of two separate answers based upon the spinach and the red meat?
Well, red meat has a lot of iron in it. It really does. And iron does play important roles in metabolism. Here's the problem is that the iron that's in red meat, there's a certain kind called heme iron, and it defies your abilities to regulate it. If you're high in iron already, it still just comes right in. And that can cause all kinds of metabolic derangements. It increases the risk, we believe, of brain disorders, particularly dementias, but it also increases the risk of cardiovascular disease, which we've known for a long period of time. Now, let's say you're going to be Popeye instead. Get your iron from spinach. You've given yourself a huge gift because in spinach, and in fact, in all plants, the iron is in a better form. It's called non-heme iron, and your body will absorb it better if you're low in iron. If you're low in iron, your body says, bring more of that in. The non-heme iron, it can regulate. If you're already iron overloaded and you're at risk for cardiovascular disease and the other things we described, your body can say, what's all this non-heme iron coming in? I don't need it now. Your body can keep it out. So with the animal-sourced iron, the heme iron, you can't regulate it. It just comes into your party uninvited. But with the plant-based iron, you can regulate it. So get your iron from plants, skip the meat. You do need iron for metabolic functions, but you don't need an excess, and the plants are the best source.
All right, interesting question from Roseanne. We'll take just a couple more. Can certain spices and herbs boost metabolism? And if so, which are the most effective?
The one that's probably been studied the most is cinnamon. Cinnamon is a curious thing. It does contain an aldehyde chemical. Aldehydes are a broad chemical category. And there is one in cinnamon, which the cinnamon researchers named cinnamaldehyde. But what's important about it is that it goes down your digestive tract and it attaches to a certain receptor in your digestive tract. And when it does, it triggers the release of adrenaline in your bloodstream. So the adrenaline goes in your blood, and that turns your metabolism up just a little bit. So in research studies, people have used this, and they've shown that people taking cinnamon on a daily basis, you know, your average person has cinnamon every 3 weeks on their toast or something, but people who are using it every day in a significant amount could lose about 7 or 8 pounds in about a 16-week period. Now, the amount that they used to do that was a teaspoon per day, which may be more than you'd want, but you get the idea that cinnamon is a metabolism booster. Ginger also. Ginger contains a similar compound that will seem to be a metabolism booster. And maybe everybody's had this experience. People may not know what capsaicins are, but they know what they do. You're back at your Mexican restaurant, and you had a few too many jalapenos on your bean burrito. And maybe 5 minutes later, sweat kind of breaks out on your forehead, and you suddenly think, is it warm in here or is it just me? It's not just that they burn your tongue, but they actually do turn on thermogenesis. So the capsaicins, which make the hot peppers hot, have that effect. If you went to the store and you got a bell pepper, same family, no capsaicins, no burn. Really doesn't do it. It doesn't increase your metabolism. It's proportional to the hotness of the pepper. It works if they're pickled. The pickled ones, fine. The fresh ones, same story.
Satish, what impact do foods that have a lot of antioxidants have on metabolism? We were talking about fruits earlier. I know a lot of those, especially the blueberry that you've been talking about a lot recently, that's an antioxidant powerhouse. So what's the connection there with the metabolism?
Yeah, several antioxidants. The blueberries have anthocyanins in them. Carrots have beta carotene. It's also in sweet potatoes and, frankly, any orange food. Mangoes, papayas have a little bit of beta carotene in them. Tomatoes have lycopene. That's what makes them red. The antioxidants, for whatever reason, are associated with weight loss. We believe it's because they play metabolic roles in the body. And with blueberries in particular, what we think is happening is that they seem to have a couple of different effects. They might reduce appetite, but they also do seem to be metabolism boosters. Pro tip, take those blueberries, put them in a muffin. When the muffins come out of the oven, don't slather them with butter, because it's going to undo your effects. You know, your metabolism will rise, but the effect of all those added calories isn't going to help you a lot. And Chuck, that's really kind of the issue here, is that we've talked about healthy foods, and there's a lot of them. But if your average person just mixes up healthy foods and unhealthy foods, they never get the benefit. So you get the unhealthy ones out, bring the healthy ones in, and that is the answer.
So you're saying if I eat a salad and then eat a Big Mac after that, the salad's not going to offset the effects of the Big Mac?
Yeah, or the big tragedy that you're going to see at Denny's and every place else is you ordered a salad. And the salad comes to you, and the salad is covered with all this shredded cheese. You know, your grandparents never knew about cheese on a salad. Somebody came up with that, you know, maybe around 1998 or something like that. And they thought, it was, you know, cheese is not a salad ingredient.
All right, let's end with fruit juices. Michelle, how do they impact metabolism? And follow up to that, is there a difference between the concentrated stuff that comes in a can that you make at home and the fresh squeezed varieties?
The concentrated and the fresh squeeze are probably about the same. But here, we may be exonerating juice, because up until now, people have said, don't eat juice. It's loaded with sugar, and that's going to be a problem. You should have the whole fruit instead. And you'll hear people saying, schools shouldn't serve juice and don't have it at home. Maybe. Harvard researchers looked at the different foods associated with weight loss as time goes on. And among these were citrus fruits, including not just the whole orange, not just the whole grapefruit, but the juices too. What I'm saying is that the juice was associated with weight loss as well. Yes, they are filled with sugars. The glycemic index of them is not all that terribly high, meaning it's not going to spike your sugar that much. I'm going to give juices a not guilty verdict.
Just out of curiosity, would you also then give sodas a pass? As long as we're sticking with beverages here.
Okay, sodas, really a fascinating area. Researchers have looked at sodas, and they've looked at people who consume a lot of sodas. Are they at higher risk for weight gain? Are they higher risk for diabetes? The answer is yes, they are at higher risk for those things. However, people redid the studies and started looking at what you were eating with the soda. And it looks like the soda, although it is high in sugar and doesn't have calories, I mean, a 20-ounce soda has 250 calories. But the big problem with the sodas really were the fact that you get the soda at the fast food chain along with a burger or the fried chicken and the French fries, and the greasy parts of that meal with the dense calories that they have that do nothing to boost your metabolism, that is probably a much bigger problem than the soda itself.
Outstanding. Let's go ahead and close up the doctor's mailbag. If we didn't get to your question today, have no fear. We will save it and do our best to get you an answer on an upcoming episode. And of course, all of this and more covered in La Power Foods Diet, which is, it says right here, the breakthrough plan that traps, tames, and burns calories for easy, and here's my favorite part, permanent weight loss, my friend. And I think that that is the name of the game that so many people struggle with. And again, as I said at the beginning of the show, I was convinced that a big part of my problem when I was overweight, Dr. Barnard, was that I just hit the genetic non-jackpot when it came to metabolism. It was incredibly slow and nothing would change it or ramp it back up. That was just how it was destined to be. It sounds to me, based off of our conversation today and everything that I've learned in the last 15 years or so, that's not the case, and that there's a lot of hope out there, and that metabolism is a big factor. But even if you're struggling with your weight, man, you got a lot of avenues to explore to have some success.
You said it, Chuck. No matter what genetic hand we've been dealt, there's a heck of a lot we can do. And the food choices that we make, that's really the key.
Absolutely. All right. So pick up your copy of The Power Foods Diet at your local bookstore or click the link in the show description or in the episode notes. And if you haven't already become an Exam Room VIP, like Dr. Barnard, I know he's VIP. We've talked about this. Head over to pcrm.org/exam room VIP. Sign up today absolutely for free. Be the first to know when we're doing our big live shows like we just did with the Power Foods Revolution at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Just had another show up in Toronto with Dr. Michael Greger. And who knows what the future is going to hold, but you will be the first to know if you become an Exam Room VIP. So click that link as well. And also, Dr. Barnard, can't wrap up today without saying a huge thank you to our friends at the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund for their continued support of the Exam Room podcast and us abroad here at the Physicians Committee, because the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund supports organizations just like ours that are carrying on the love that Greg had for animals by promoting plant-based health and working to end animal abuse while also emphasizing programs that promote systemic change and benefit us human beings as well. They're doing a lot of good. So I encourage you to check out their website at gregoryriderfund.org. That's Gregory Ryder, spelled R-E-I-T-E-R, fund.org. Love me some Allison Mahoney and everything that she is doing there. And it seems like every time I click on their website, I get their latest newsletter, they're up to something else. And they're just expanding their reach. And I love so much all the good that they're doing in the world.
I'm with you, Chuck. I have to say, I always read the newsletter when it comes out. And I have to say, Greg was such a warm, kind person. And Allison is carrying his spirit along so beautifully.
And it's such an honor to have them on board with us here at the Physicians Committee and at the Exam Room. Dr. Barnard, thank you for your time today, my friend.
Sure. Well, thank you, Chuck.
The Exam Room live every Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Physicians Committee's YouTube channel and Facebook page. And I want to take a second to say thank you so much to everyone who came out for the Exam Room Live and Power Foods Revolution at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on the day that Dr. Barnard's new book, The Power Foods Diet, hit store shelves. This was just an incredible book launch party, if ever there was one. Of course, Dr. Barnard and myself, we were there, plus Chef Dustin Harder. And Stephanie Ignafo really stole the show. She really stole the show. Because she came out on roller skates. She came out on roller skates. And they weren't just normal roller skates. The wheels actually lit up as she was skating across the floor that night. And you have to remember that with Stephanie Ignafo, this is so profound because at 41 years old, Stephanie was unable to even get around the house. She had to use a walker. She was using handicap tags. She could barely move. She was on all kinds of medication. Her list of illnesses was just a mile long. Think of a CVS length receipt worth of illnesses. And so here's a woman at 41, broken down. She changes over to a plant-based diet, gets her entire life back, gets her youth back, turns back the hands of time, skates across the floor like it was nothing. Just having the time of her life with the biggest smile on her face, free of the chains that come with being sick. And that was the most magical part of the night. So cool to see Stephanie there. And we're going to be posting that on the show very soon for you guys, so you can enjoy the Power Foods Revolution as well. That was really cool. Also, Shawnee Hayes, she was there last night. So good to see her. And so many of you just wonderful exam roomies who came up to say hi and share your stories. You guys just, you inspire me more than you could ever possibly know with your own transformations. The illnesses that you have overcome, the weight that you have lost, the way that you all have gained your life back. And I want to say a special hi to Susie from Michigan. She came in with her family, had to be there. And so to make the trek from Lansing, I believe, all the way to Washington, D.C. was just, it was so nice to meet you all. You guys really do touch my heart. So thank you so much for being part of the show and a magical evening. And also, I want to say hi to all of the exam roomies who came out to see the show with Dr. Michael Greger up in Toronto recently at the Planted Expo, and to see me speak the next day as well. You guys just were magical as well. It blows my mind that people from all over the world listen to the show and raise their health IQs. You guys are just, you are my fuel, to be perfectly honest with you. You guys inspire me to no end. So thank you so much for taking the time to come out and say hi. I met so many wonderful people, so many inspirational stories. And it was also great to catch up with our friends Robert Cheek and Carly Bodrug, who were up there, and to tape the podcast with Dr. Michael Greger. And let me tell you something. Dr. Greger was in rare form that evening, my friend. Rare form. We've got that show coming out with him very soon. A lot of personality in this. We were going to do a full show on unlocking aging, the secrets to longevity. And we definitely got into that. But there was something about Dr. Greger that night that was a little something special. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this with you. It was a new side of Dr. Greger that I think you're really going to like. I got the biggest kick out of this interview. I thought it was a marvelous, marvelous evening. So much personality. Plus, he broke some news on the show about what his next big project might be. So stay tuned for that. If you want to know what's up after How Not to Age, Dr. Greger is going to give us the scoop on the show. And funny thing about Greger as well, you know, he recently said in another interview, he was asked whether Coca-Cola was healthy. Was this a good drink to have? And he actually said yes, but only when compared to cow's milk. So yeah, let that sink in for a second. Cow's milk, dairy, is worse for you than a can of Coke. And he cited the hormone IGF-1 as one of the biggest reasons. Because remember, IGF-1 has many ties to cancer, so closely tied to it. And studies have shown, though, that a plant-based diet is extremely effective for lowering levels of IGF-1, with results often showing up in just a matter of weeks. And then if you stick with it long-term, Dr. Greger says that after 14 years, people eating a plant-based diet have about half the levels of IGF-1 of those eating a standard diet. That's a huge drop. And it's one that is likely saving a lot of lives. So we've got a lot of nuggets coming our way with Dr. Greger on the Unlocking Longevity podcast that's coming up very soon here on The Exam Room. And one more quick thank you, a huge thank you as well to Holly Plank for coming with me to Toronto. She was kind of my executive international producer, shall we say, And she's just a rock star for us on social media here at the Physicians Committee. So Holly, thank you so very much. We could not have done what we did without you. And of course, to Stephen and the team at the Planted Expo, you guys are top notch. Can't wait to see you in Seattle and Vancouver as well. But for today, my friends, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to the incredible Dr. Neil Barnard for being here and raising our metabolism health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.